I was only joking about the me having to do the intro. So, but if you,
no, I'll do the intro.
Okay, you'll do the intro then.
I'll do it right now. this is the Legendary Frogcast coming at you at 10 p.m.
Oh, it's because, not that. Oh, it's 8 p.m. for me.
Because D&D was canceled, and we're like, hey, the podcast we had to cancel. Everyone's here. So let's do it. Do it to it.
Do it to it indeed.
So that's what we're doing. I'm Joseph Blanchett. With me is Dustin Watts.
Hi, guys. Ahoy, ahoy.
And Randy Keepers.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey. So we're going to talk about a movie that already came out.
That I only just finally got around to seeing. I'm so sorry.
We're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. Not just three, but Randy wants to talk about the entire series.
Well, what I want to do, and just so we're setting realistic expectations here, because, you know, I don't like our audience feeling like we're giving them a weird rub on this. Primarily, my goal is to bring up how absolutely shocking it was that Guardians of the Galaxy, in spite of, you know, most casual comics fans and people in general didn't know what it was. And that it came out of nowhere and won everybody's hearts. And nowadays you can't go anywhere without somebody knowing what Groot is, or knowing who Star-Lord is, or knowing who Gamora is, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, like,
not only that, it became, without a doubt in my mind, the best of the MCU series.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that, actually.
Yeah. They became the heart of the MCU, basically.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the fact that, like, Captain America had, like, you know, an okay first movie, then the next two were great. Or, you know, I guess it's mostly, I would hold, like, Captain America to that, but I think all three Guardians film are like top tier MCU movies.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. So first, we'll get the Guardians 3, you know, review out of the way. We'll get that one going.
Well, do you want to do that, or you just want to spin?
You know what, Joey? Let's do that. Let's do what you're saying. Because, you know what, it makes sense to me. Because now we're already talking about it. Yeah. And we're already talking about the thing we want to talk about. So, you know what, it's not a review anymore. We lied to you, audience. It's not a review anymore. It's a retrospective and a glimpse at the importance of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and how if Marvel just trusts the creative process, if they just trust the creatives to be creative, there's going to be gold every time,
And when you don't trust your creatives, well,
you get Eternals.
Oh God!
Trusted her on that. You know, people shit on that film. I think it's fine, and it's obviously the movie on I forgot the director's name, but that, like, she wanted to make. So I don't know.
Only real gripes, the gripes that I have with Eternals, because now I'm going to be talking about cosmic stuff, is that it felt like it exists to be a platform to show the stakes of the movie, like the next Marvel phase coming soon, like showing the size of things that are to come, and there isn't anything specific wrong with Eternals existing. It's just that a lot of it feels like it was there because the studio needed it. That's my real, because I love Jack Kirby nonsense. I really do, and I love that we got some Kirbyan art information, with the ship designs, with the designs of how the Eternals work, or not the Eternals, but the Celestials work, and all that good stuff. I love the art direction. Some of the characters are fun. That's yeah. But anyway, this isn't about.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of waiting. We're kind of waiting now. It's like,
yeah,
okay, that was kind of a weird offshoot. How does like why is it relevant? So we just have to wait, basically.
But but on the other hand, because I'm gonna reel this right back into Guardians. Yeah,
so let's
Guardians.
Let's go back to around 2012, 2013.
Uh huh.
I guess Avengers was 2012, right?
Yes, Avengers was 2012, and it was a hit.
Yeah, so around the time Avengers, and then like Iron Man 3, it's like these movies are proven to make a bajillion dollars. It's like, well, okay, so Phase 2, we're going to introduce the Guardians of the Galaxy. And remember, this is right after Winter Soldier. And yeah, it was just like I think I remember I remembered Rocket from Marvel's Ultimate Alliance 3.
Marvel versus Capcom
3. Marvel versus Capcom 3.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, that's that raccoon from that game. I think I saw him in like one of the Avengers cartoons once, but like I didn't know who the heck these guys were.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then
I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, even I barely knew about them, but that's because I knew they were bringing in Thanos. And, you know, that's when you start bringing in Thanos, you kind of have to bring in the Guardians of the Galaxy because he's kind of they're kind of tied in together.
Cosmic with the whole, stuff.
Yeah, Marvel Cosmic. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is the first time, besides kind of Thor, that we've got like, hey, this is the cosmic side of the MCU. And then, like they said, the guy who directed Slither and Power is directing this. I was like, okay, I remember liking those movies. That's a choice, I guess.
I mean, so, it was a gamble giving a director who wasn't that well known. Well, I mean, it wasn't that much. It was giving a director that was not that well known a property that was not that well known.
And listening to Gunn's interviews about, like, at first he didn't want to do this movie. And then he thought more about Rocket. And you could tell that Gunn, I mean, if you watch all the movies, especially 3, it's like, Rocket is the through line of this movie, of these movies. And it's like he connected with that character, and that's ultimately why he decided to do the movie. And he came on board with a script already written. So he like took the script and kind of made it his own. That's why I kind of feel like there's all the MCU-isms kind of in that first movie, like connecting it to everything else. But go back in time, 2014, how did you get guys like Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think we talked about it back in the day. People who have been around since the beginning, I remember explicitly being excited about these things, and I remember explicitly that I was bouncing off the walls with how excited I was that we were getting a film adaptation about Guardians of the Galaxy. And I remember like everybody being like, oh wow, I never heard about that. Randy, what do you know about this? And I'll be like, oh, let me tell you, there's a raccoon that shoots things. And there's a tree, it talks. And it's all good. It's so cool, I promise. And so, like, I sounded like a crazy person banging pots and pans, just trying to be like, "Oh, go watch the movie, you lunatic! Everybody's got to see this." And so, like, and I remembered when I finally got to watch it, and I sat down, I watched it, and I got to see Ronan the Accuser being in live action. I got to see, I think the only disappointment I had was that Nova Corps, they weren't wearing power suits, that they were flying rocket ships. And that was the only thing that I was like, oh, yeah, everything was great except Nova Corps.
Yeah, and that was kind of a letdown.
Well, but the thing is that people who didn't know what Nova Corps was they didn't really care, and that's what mattered. Like the whole package as a whole, it was fun because it was funny. The characters are likable. They're even relatable in some places. And the licensed soundtrack dragged people in kicking and screaming because, like, I can tell you right now, the most common thing that I heard from, like, my parents and, like, anybody who was older who was watching the movies and stuff like that, like, virtually everybody that was older, like, oh, I really liked it. I really liked the soundtrack, though. And I'm like, yes, yes. And and then when
it was I don't know, I haven't have any numbers or stats in front of me, but it was like,
yeah,
it's like the first soundtrack to hit some sort of record on the Billboard chart in like a really long time.
Yeah, it was a long time, and people I remember the response and the people eventually coming around to me and being like, hey, So what's this? What's that? Why is this? Why is that? What is this? Who is what? And I'm like, hey, did you hear about how there's the Infinity Stones? Oh, what do you think about that? And I'm like, I could talk your ears off about it.
Yeah, even though the Infinity Stones were in Thor, I think this was like the first time we really got like a really good sense of what they were.
Yeah, because Benicio del Toro playing the Collector, which, by the way, monumental.
Yeah.
Benicio del Toro playing the Collector and being like giving explanation on the Infinity Stones and stuff like that. And like, you know what's funny is apparently, according to James Gunn, they thought up that backstory in like an afternoon, but the funniest thing to me, at least, is like, I don't actually believe that that's what you guys did, because it's very, very, very close to the actual canon to why they exist to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think the idea was more that, like, they wrote it in an afternoon, not like they probably knew the original lore, so they says, "Hey, we should deviate from."
But and then Yondu actually controlling, like, how they worked his power into making it work in a sci-fi setting. Because in the original comics, Yondu, he had a bow and arrow, and he would shoot, and he could control the arrow that he shot by whistling. So having Michael Rooker actually whistle to make the arrow do cool things, it was just like really, really. I loved it. I loved the party or the team kind of getting a dynamic. And I also liked, because now that we've got this, the retrospective or in retrospect, Rocket behaving the way that he does, or Peter Quill reacting the way that he does, or Gamora being how she is, or even Drax being Drax, they're very consistent. It's a very consistent through line for all of them, that they are all exactly who they are. And even in the third movie, and when you start to find out more about them, or you start to get more of a feel for them. And let's talk about how in the first Guardians, how we get the beginnings of one of the best character arcs in the MCU period, which is Nebula. Becoming a good person in spite of everything. So anyway,
she started as just like a hardcore villain.
Yeah, villain.
And then just gradually it sneaking up on you, realizing that no, she's not a villain. She's just incredibly broken. Mm-hmm. And if given a chance,
she could be a hero. And I love that. I love that. So that first movie, Ronan being defeated and Peter being able to survive. Glenn Close, can we talk? Oh my God, Glenn Close being in it and being Nova Prime, that is so great. Yeah. Oh man, the whole thing.
The casting in this series is
It's been fun. It's just fun. The whole way. I just, man.
I think at some point, we had like I don't know, like a top five MCU movies podcast at one point, or like it was part of the thing. And I remember saying like, I'm going to cheat and say it's Guardians 1 and 2 because they work so well together as like a two-part thing about like all the characters being consistent throughout. Although I will say Drax kind of changes a lot between the two movies.
Well, because he learns, like, you know, but he's still headstrong. He's still the first one in the fight. And the fact that he does it to protect his friends is still,
yeah.
Anyway,
but yeah, just like out of all the MCUs so far, it's like these two movies feel like, you know, they play naturally off each other. They advance in ways that you would expect. It goes in directions like the first one is about Quill's mom. Well, the next one is obviously about Quill's dad. You know, it falls through. And by the time that second movie came along, when like Ego destroys that Walkman, like that meant something to me as a viewer, like really hardcore. I was like, oh no, Quill loves that Walkman. I know what it means to him.
Yeah. And the thing is that James Gunn and I, so yeah, we were talking about, or earlier you were talking about how like James Gunn, oh yeah, I remember that guy. He directed Slither. I remember James Gunn as both being former Troma. I know that he worked with Troma a lot. And yeah. Troma films are like a guilty pleasure of mine. They're irreverent, they're terrible, and I love them, right? Kabuki Man. I love Kabuki Man.
But Troma is also like a nursery for direct. It's where good directors come from.
Well, it teaches them to take risks. But anyway, I'm sorry. I could talk about that for hours, but I'm not going to do that here.
I mean, like Guardians, like getting to the personal side of Gunn, was a turning point.
Yes.
Because he was known for these like violent movies, kind of crude humor. Like his old tweets got him into a big trouble.
Yep.
Like around this time, the second movie came out. And he said, it's like, hey, it's like, I'm not making excuses, but like, you know, when you're in that mindset, like you're kind of expected to be crude and be all that stuff. And making the Guardian movie, where it's like, he wasn't trying to make it like violent and crude and all that stuff, but
no.
He really said, like, I got to understand, it's like myself a little more, like looking through Rocket and like how people change, and I realize, oh, this is kind of a changing point in my life that I'm going through making this movie.
Yeah, and like for me, the major place where I saw, where I saw James Gunn first, or like where I remember him the best from, was a crappy game, that came out on the Xbox 360 and the PS3, and it's Lollipop Chainsaw. I've still got my copy, Lollipop Chainsaw. Yeah, it's gonna remake. But anyway, so like knowing that was where he was coming from, I feel like there's this authenticity that James Gunn has with the characters and the way that he tells the stories. I just recently got to watch Peacemaker and The Suicide Squad. I watched again recently just so I can, you know, keep it fresh in my brain. And that's a very constant, and it's a very James Gunn thing to do, is make characters that even though, you know, one of them is a talking tree, and two of them are green aliens, and one of them is a cybernetic raccoon, and, you know, one of them is a kid who's stuck in the 80s, even today. It's weird how he can make these characters that I have so little in common with, but fully relate to, you know, and like having those characters that are not human feel so human really helps like sell them to people. And I think that was, you know, Guardians 1 was a fantastic starting point for us to fall in love with these characters and And like for me, I already like Rocket Raccoon. I thought he was awesome. I still think Rocket Raccoon's awesome. He's one of my favorite Marvel characters. And this is again, this is before this all took off. I have been a Thanos fanboy since I played Marvel vs. Capcom 2 back in the day. That Thanos has always been my boy, and he has been, and I literally have a Thanos shrine in my room. Because yeah, you know, the cosmic stuff in Marvel has always interested me, and I've always loved it. And seeing all these people come in with no idea what they're getting into, but sitting in and enjoying the ride and having fun and seeing and loving these characters that I love so much, it just makes me nothing but happy. Mm. To see people like me, I'm the exact opposite of the gatekeeper. I'm the door attendant holding the door open and being like, "Everybody get in here! There's a raccoon shooting guns. It's awesome."
Even in that first movie, when like Thanos's I don't know, like assistant shows up.
Uh huh. Oh yeah,
yeah. It's like, oh, he's from Avengers. I know him. It was the first time. Yeah, then we have first time Thanos was voiced by Josh Brolin, more like up to date design. So it was like that was kind of the introduction to that. Even though like looking back, it's like nothing like the Thanos that was in Infinity War. Mm-hmm. But I know Gunn said it's like he didn't really want the cameo in there, but it was one of those things that like Disney basically
they
made
did
him
need it. Yeah, they did need it.
Yeah, and timeline-wise, Guardians 2 takes place about half a year later.
Yeah.
So after Groot sacrificed himself, we have little baby Groot. Gamora and Peter are kind of realizing their relationship with each other. Rocket is like, doesn't want to accept that he's becoming part of a family. Like, looking the way Rocket acts in the first two movies, and Infinity War, well, in Endgame.
Just in general.
After seeing Volume 3, it's like, oh yeah. It's like, no wonder why he's the person, like, the way he is. And he acted that way to everyone getting dusted and all that stuff. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and like the thing, the other thing that I noticed that he has, or a big thing that I noticed that he has, and it's a beautiful and tragic character flaw that he has, and it, I love it because it helps him feel, real, but him visibly being like as upset as he was for specifically Groot being dusted, the way he was responding to it. The thing about Rocket, and it gets shown in, you know, front and center in Volume 3, is his extreme guilt complex that he has, where he blames himself when things go wrong. And that's why he's scared of losing people he cares about, because the first time that it happened to him, it hurt so bad because they were his first friends. They were the first people he wanted to save, the people he wanted to, you know, be with. And he blamed himself for what. The side note for 3, when we get to talk about it, High Evolutionary is a prick, and I love what a terrible, terrible guy he is.
Yeah, like, no, they
great villain.
Yeah,
but anyway,
but again, we'll get anyway, back to that.
But yeah, so like seeing Rocket's responses, and then even seeing him, like how he responds to, heck, most situations, and then when you find out. When you find out like what his real abilities are, what is Rocket Raccoon's superpower? It is that he is a genius, and seeing like one of the things that you'll notice that is that Rocket doesn't like it when you push back on him with a plan, right? That because Nine times out of 10, or hell, no, no, 99 times out of 100, Rocket's right when he's, you know, when he's giving an estimate on something. And when in Infinity War and the when he was hanging out with Thor, you'll notice that, so he hates it when people called him, you know, at that point he hated when people called him a raccoon. He hates it when people call him stuff like rodent and things like that. But you'll notice that Thor calls him rabbit, but he doesn't have any of the, like, he doesn't have any of the connotations. Like, he, it, when he's calling him rabbit, it doesn't sound like he's using it like an insult, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when Thor is calling Rocket rabbit, he's like, oh, okay, that just, you know, I guess that's, you know, since Thor isn't using it as a slur, he's like, oh, okay, I guess that's, you know, that's not a mean thing to call me. I'm all right with that. But like with almost any other time that somebody calls him something else, he's like, no, I'm not a whatever the hell it is you called me. Like when Quill calls him a trash panda, and he's like, I don't even know what that is, but I hate it. Like, because, you know, you'll see that he's so used to being, you know, feeling like a monster. He's so used to feeling like a freak, and that. And seeing Guardians 3 contextualize all of that makes those moments just matter so much more. Like his breakdown in the first movie, when he's like, when they're in the bar and they're gambling, and like Drax is, you know, got his gun out and he's freaking out and stuff like that, and he starts yelling about, you know, like, he calls me vermin, you call me, you know, and then he's, you know, he's upset, he's actually really upset. And after seeing the events of the third one, it's like, yeah, dude, I get it. You know. Anyway.
Yeah, I just watched the commentary over the weekend, and I was thinking, like the scene where a High Evolutionary kills his friends and how he reacted. It's like, well, okay, let's think back to every time in the movies when Rocket lost someone. And you know, in that first movie, you know, Groot was probably the first person he got close to after he, you know, he escaped and all that. And like, Groot sacrificed himself for him. And Rocket probably doesn't think he's worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But like, Groot sees the good in everyone, so he does. And I think in Guardians 2, when like he's just being an asshole to everyone, like that's him pushing everyone away because he doesn't want to get close again, like to having a family again.
Yeah,
because
he
knows what happens.
And, like, it's really sweet that Peter like explicitly refers to him as his best friend. You know, that he specifically. You know, the Peter calls Rocket his best friend, and I like, yeah, his second best friend, yeah, with Drax, yeah. But the thing is that, you know, to Peter, you know, the Guardians are his family, and the other thing, one of the amazing moments in 3. Is when Past Gamora is jumping down Peter's throat about Rocket, and how like Nebula comes in, and like when Gamora's like, well, you're family, and she's like, well, so is he, and like that, you know, that is just such a, God, it's just so many good character moments in those movies, so many great. Memorable things that happen. Yeah. You see that.
Yeah, and like the way that like after Thanos did the snap, I think everyone was kind of in shock.
Mm.
But like, oh, yeah. You know, the way Groot, like the new Groot, again said like his last words were like "Help me, Dad" or something like that, and how just everyone was just kind of speechless about what was going on. But then how hard Rocket, you know, fought to get everyone back. Like, he had to, like, put Thor in his place, saying, it's like, hey, like, people are kind of dead. We can bring them back. And to him, that meant, like, something else, because he had such a tragic time. And it's skipping ahead to 3. But the moment where Rocket dies, and he sees Lyra. And
Lila,
and I kind of broke down when I watched it at home when I did this, where he said, it's like, oh, we're all traveling together in space, and Rocket goes, can I come too? It's because he doesn't think he's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, he thinks he is a creature that doesn't deserve to live. And he's been concerned probably his whole life that his friends wouldn't accept him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Lila there is like just part of his imagination or what it is. Yeah. But she's like, well, of course you were invited. And like, you can see the relief on his face.
Yeah.
And like, but it's like, oh, but it's not your time yet. And like, that's where he really changed, where he starts caring. Like I gotta explain this in the commentary. Rocket's never cared about other people. He cared about himself first, his friends second, and then nothing else. Saving the galaxy was just kind of a fun thing to do for him. Mm-hmm. He'll save his friends, but everyone else doesn't really matter. You know, I think over the course of Endgame and Guardians 3, especially at the end of 3, when he rescues all the animals, that's when Rocket becomes who he really is. He has empathy for all living creatures and all that, because he knows he came from like the lowest of what was out there. And yeah, Rocket's a great character. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm sorry, Dustin, you haven't had much time to talk. Anything about like these movies that really stand out to you?
I mean, I think what y'all have said it too, but I'm just amazed that it took. It's something that MCU's been doing in general, but this was this was the peak of it. He took characters no one outside of comics had heard of, and like, turned them into household names.
Oh yeah,
I mean, if you told the me of like before these movies came out that the Guardians of the Galaxy would be known internationally by millions, not if it billions, and I'd call you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. My mom, bless her soul, before she passed, loved Groot. Like, just. And she was never really into much of the Marvel stuff anyways, but she grew attached to Groot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if you weren't comic book fans, the Guardians movie, especially that first one, really works as just a fun, like, action adventure sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm. It is. The Guardians of the Galaxy series is what I wish the rest of Marvel could be. Something that everyone could enjoy and just come in and be, okay, I like this. This is enjoyable. I want more of this.
Yeah.
Well, I think some of it is, like, definitely Iron Man was.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, but yeah, it's like not a lot of. It's like, grandma isn't talking about Eternals, you know. So
yeah.
Or my uncle went to go see the Immortals when they had it in the theaters and was like, this is dog crap.
Oh, he went to IMAX to see Immortals or Inhumans?
Inhumans.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, they had like the first two episodes of IMAX, like they're really trying to get that off the ground.
Yeah, they were, because they were trying to take one over to Fox. They were trying to bring the Inhumans in and replace the Mutants.
By the time that TV show came out, like that wasn't even relevant anymore. It was just, you know, part of the stuff they had in the pipeline.
Yeah, by the time, in fact, most of it doesn't matter because they brought back, they brought the Inhumans in with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and did it a whole lot better.
Well, it came out first in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then then a TV show, and then Black Bolt showed up in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Same actor and everything. Who's also Chris Pike on Star Trek. Do you know that?
Yeah. Which I just, it's the MCU. I mean, they've made names out of no name characters, and yet characters everybody knows. It's like, nope, just whiff it every time.
Yep. And so I got a hilarious confession to make here.
Oh,
I'm gonna broadcast it on the internet so everyone knows. So movies don't usually make me cry. The tear jerkingest scenes that can ever happen, you know, usually I don't, sometimes I'll, you know, get a single tear rolling on down my face and that's usually the expectation for me. Like, at the end of Guardians 1, I didn't have any like that. In Guardians 2, when Yondu gets the send off from the other Ravagers, that then they showed up and stuff like that, and they played the sad music and stuff and all that jazz. You know, I got a single tear rolling down my
father and son playing on the Zoom.
Yeah. So, so now the thing is that Shella was watching it with me. And Shella cries a lot. She does. But that's, you know, it's because she's got a really big heart and she cares about everything. And so we were watching the thing, you know, first scene that happens, the very opening scene when you see Little Rocket, you know, getting grabbed, and then, you know, when he meets his friends and, you know, he says his first words, "Hurts." Oh, you know, God. It's like, oh yeah, right. Like, I was like, oh, and there, I look over at Shella, she's like sobbing, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be one of those movies. Oh no, I gotta strap in. And then when it gets to the scene where, you know, Rocket's dying, and he sees his friends, and it seems like it's the end and everything like that for him, and all that jazz, I could not hold it back. Yeah. I was like watching, like, it just utterly heartbroken, like seeing this, because, you know, I mentioned it already. I love Rocket. He's easily one of my favorite characters, and seeing just how sad this whole thing was, and I'm like, Rocket better not die before he gets to whoop that guy's ass, man. No, there would not be, the universe would not be fair if
and then he doesn't, actually.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. No, he there was the deleted scene where he's locked up in jail now.
Well, even like in the movie, he's, you know, he has a chance to kill him, and he's like, well, I'm a guardian of the galaxy. Like, I don't do that anymore.
Oh, yeah, before he got his shit tossed,
by
the guardians, he got his ass whooped by everybody.
Yeah. I mean, he got hit. It was six ways to Sunday, and then seven more ways on Sunday.
Yeah, but...
So, I guess we're kind of really talking about three now. What a breath of fresh air after the MCU's kind of been struggling, like post-pandemic time. Uh-huh. Like, this has been the first legitimately great MCU movie, you know, since 2020. That, like, I don't have any problems with. It's like, it's pretty much perfect, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I completely agree with that. Like, there haven't been, and the only reason why I didn't see Guardians 3, it is because I have just been busy and broke all summer long. Like, I would have I would have been there opening night, but the problem was that I just I was broke. I was broke as hell. So I couldn't. But yeah, like I admittedly, as much as I am a huge Marvel mark. I love Marvel, I do. But the trouble is that like the way that Marvel movies have been so far lately, and Marvel properties in general, like I haven't seen Secret Invasion yet because I don't know. It just doesn't feel as engaging to me, you know? And like I'm excited about the Marvels, you know, and I do want to go see that when that comes out eventually. But
Loki season two,
I'm on board for. I'm ready for that, right? But like I don't know, like I feel like the part of me that wanted to support all of Marvel that I had been for as long as I did, that part of me is slowly getting out of me, like because I've just kind of lost interest in these. So
well,
it was
like I like Secret Invasion. Uh-huh. It's kind of up and down through the entire thing, but the last episode was one of the most disappointing
things I've ever
seen. Yeah.
It's really like it was an okay series overall. But that last episode was like, oh, they really had no idea what to do with this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they just wanted a certain status quo at the end. And they had no idea how to get there.
Yeah.
And like, they had some good Nick Fury stuff, but the overall plot was just not very good.
It's almost as if they were trying to check it. It's almost as if they were trying to check ticks off a list and just didn't think it through.
Well, here's kind of what really happened. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but apparently the original plot, when they filmed and finished the series, it had a whole bunch of Russia invading other countries. And it was a big part of the plot. Guess what happened when they were shortly after that, real life stuff happened. That's why that stuff is never explored very much in the show, even though the Russia part is still there. Mm-hmm. But I heard they basically reshot almost the entire thing after the fact. That's why it was so expensive. That's why it was like $250 million, which is crazy for a show like that. Because they basically shot it twice. So that's why it's a mess.
Yeah.
And plus, the MCU has just been overstuffed with too many projects lately. Which is, I think, on the turnaround. Especially with this strike happening, which isn't great.
Solidarity and all that good stuff.
But that's why I like things like Moon Knight, even though we all like Moon Knight, how it's like, well, do we really need a Moon Knight? It just seems like they just wanted to have more Disney Plus shows and She-Hulk. That's exactly what it was. They said, okay, Disney Plus, we're going to support this thing with as many Disney Plus shows as we can. And that's like, you know, some of them were good, some of them were average, some of them were not that good. And the pandemic didn't help things.
No.
And Russia invading Ukraine didn't help things.
No.
Story-wise, it's a horrible thing, but I'm just saying. Anyway, Guardians 3. You know how when Quantumania came out, there was a lot of problems with that movie. One of the things is like the visual effects weren't great in a lot of it. Up to par. And stories started coming out about work schedules and overworking and them just rushing everything. Even like Wakanda Forever like didn't look awesome throughout the entire thing. And like I thought they would put a lot of effort into that. This movie, though, has some of the best visual effects, like, I've really seen. Not that a lot of it is, like, super groundbreaking or anything, but, like, I had no idea with, like, Cosmo the dog, like, saying, wait, is that a CG dog? It must be CG. But wait, it's so much like a dog. And, like, I had no idea. And as far as I know, it's a fully CG character. And yeah, I was just watching it. I was like, man, they just really nailed Rocket. Like Cosmo, I can't even tell it's computer generated. And like it just like Rocket is the new leader. The new golem. You know, well, like Thanos was really good, so I guess it's kind of already been done, but like Thanos and Rocket are like two CG characters where I don't even think about them being CG. It's like they're actually like living things, like, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I hate to break in here, but what I have to say is actually very relevant right now. I mean, as we're recording this right now, as of, let's see here, August 7th, the Marvel Visual Artists are unionizing.
Oh, good.
Under IALTC. So they're hopefully going to be treated a lot better.
That's good. Yeah, they are overworked and they...
overworked, underpaid.
Yep.
These studios basically bid for the lowest price to do these projects. Like, it's not great.
Again, all power to them.
Like, from like some stuff I hear, like they schedule for like the number of shots basically, and it doesn't matter if it's wire removal or if it's, you know, creating a fully CG scene with a bunch of characters. It's like that's considered one shot, you know. Like, yeah, there's no difference between them.
Yep, and that's good that they're doing that because they work too hard to be underappreciated like they've been.
Yeah, I know someone who knows people in some visual effects companies, like in a Canada and stuff, that work on Marvel shows. And they said like, that might be a story that I know someone. I kind of forget, but I definitely heard stories where it's like, yeah, like. Especially around like the WandaVision time when they were doing all that, like Disney was just giving them all these movies and all these shows, and like they couldn't keep up. They were sick of looking at Vision's face by the end of it, making a CG face.
Yeah, and back of the thing I wanted to say.
Yeah. Okay.
So another character I like a lot. I really, really liked Adam Warlock in this.
Yeah, he was an absolute cinnamon roll.
Yeah, it was really funny that happened with it. Like,
Adam, tell them we mean business.
Tell them we mean business. He's like, okay. He's like, oh.
He has this like look on his face, like he just did a good thing, and everyone's like horrified.
He's like, uh oh. And then like the animal getting all sad, he's like, oh, I don't like how that makes me feel. like I love that he's, you know, he's still learning and he's, you know, becoming a person.
The idea is that since didn't have time to mature, he still has the brain of like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
It's like he's like literally just a big kid.
Mm-hmm.
They literally should have let him cook a little bit longer, but they had to. Which brings us back around to, you know, the high evolutionary being kind of an ass.
Oh yeah.
A little bit.
You know what that means? You know what that means? In the new Guardians, like the new Guardians of the Galaxy that's led by Rocket?
Yeah.
Rocket's about 6 or 7 years old, right? Or 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's a time skip from the He's under a decade old, is really what it is. He's under 10 years old.
No.
He's about that old because in Guardians 1 he says he's only 4 years old.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would just say that, like, on his, on the, like, his prison thing.
Yeah.
Okay, and fair enough. So,
yeah. And so,
okay, so, so and, 4 years.
Yeah. Adam Warlock is only a few months old, or maybe, like, you know, a year or so old. The little girl who's with them can't be too old. And Groot, I'm kind of going to count the fact that he had to grow up again as him, you know, being, you know, a kid again, because he did go through, you know, puberty again and all that stuff. And Kraglin, Kraglin looks like he's in his 40s or so.
He's right? A little older than Peter, because, like, during the Christmas specials when they were a kid, he was, like, a teenage. He was, like, 14 or 15.
Yeah.
When Peter was, like, 8 or 9, or, like, 10 or so. Rocket's 13 years old, according to the internet.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, he's not that old then.
Yeah.
Cosmo was sent into space in the 60s. That would make the oldest member of that team the dog.
That's true.
Which doesn't make any sense, but I mean, no. It's Guardians of the Galaxy. When has sense ever been a part of it?
So that's kind of a fun fact. We call that trivia. The oldest member of the new Guardians of the Galaxy is likely Cosmo.
Which, by the way, I love the fact that they, I love the fact that they developed Cosmo.
Oh yeah, I love that Cosmo is a telekinetic dog, still, and that's just cool.
And this was in the Christmas special, but I love how Mantis and Peter end up being brother and sister.
Yeah, that was kind of adorable.
Yeah, and like. Mantis in that special about how she was scared to tell him because he thought it would bring up bad memories, but you know, Peter's just glad to have family again at that point. Mm-hmm. He thought they were basically all gone.
Yep.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about Rocket, but like the journey Peter goes through is definitely really good too.
Well, the journey, yeah, the journey they all go through is awesome.
And even though like the Gamora Infinity War thing happened, and she came back as a past version, even adds to it because, like, he has to get over the fact that, like, that's technically not the Gamora he knew, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He has to, like, move on with his relationship, move on with his life. And that's why he ends up on Earth at the end of it. He's always afraid to go back. Yeah, so Guardians 2 is my favorite. We're not going back to Guardians 2, but Guardians 2 is my favorite MCU movie.
Okay.
And I think 3, I don't think it's better than 2 per se. But like it's razor thin. Like I just think 2 hit all the right spots at the time, and maybe 3 will surpass it.
Yeah.
You know, a little down the line. But I think nearly every one of those movies are like 9 through 9 or 10, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're just nearly perfect. They're the thing I like. Has action, has comedy, has emotion, has heart, has character, has music, has crazy visual effects, you know, locations and things like that, and bravo, James Gunn.
Yeah,
and good luck on his future endeavors in DC, and hope he can turn them around. Because, oh boy,
knowing what he did with Guardians, and knowing like I haven't seen the newest couple episodes, but like that new Superman show, mm-hmm. The animated show, just like how wholesome it is. It's like, oh, this is like what Superman should be. And I think James Gunn will bring that, like that kind of energy to you know, live action. Like,
I certainly hope so. Yeah.
Cause I still like Man of Steel, but even I admit, like, that was a big departure for the character.
Yeah. No,
and they never improved on it.
They didn't. You're right. And the big thing for me, at least, is that, so, like, yeah, because I watched a few episodes of the, I've only seen the first episode of
My Adventures with Superman.
Yeah. And like, the, just watching it and him just being just, gosh, a giant puppy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I love him.
He's just happy to be there. Mm-hmm. You just kind of want to bundle him up in some blankets and tell him it's all going to be okay.
I'm hoping that the direction that James Gunn can lead them in can help them understand what the heart of DC characters is. Because I feel like James Gunn, he is a comic book nerd. He understands what makes the stories good and why they're good. And he can make characters relatable.
Let's just hope he's allowed to do so. That's
why Peacemaker was so good.
Yeah.
Because it was a show about he does this a lot, a bad person becoming not quite as bad, you know? It's I forget Peacemaker's real name, but like it's about him
Chris Smith,
okay. It's about him like realizing he doesn't want to be a murderer or a killer anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want to like be the assassin he was even hired for. And considering how fast they made that movie and made that show, like, it's kind of amazing how well it turned out. And he is directing Superman, right?
I think so.
Yes, he's writing and directing Superman. And I don't know anything else. I think the guy who directed Flash is doing Brave and the Bold. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, let's hope it turns out better than The Flash did.
Well, do you really blame the director for that movie?
No. There's a lot going on
with that movie. A lot of moving parts,
yeah. I heard a good take on that. It's like, yeah, it's not that, it doesn't matter that The Flash wasn't that good. It's the fact that director made it at all. Like, he was able to actually get it done. That's probably why he got hired for Brave and the Bold. Plus, he's familiar with that stuff. Anyway,
Meg 2 The Trench has earned more money in its global box office opening weekend than The Flash.
Yeah, I was looking at box. Okay, the reason that movie exists is because it was crazy popular overseas. And I was looking at Box Office Mojo, and yeah, it made like over 100 million internationally.
Oh, gosh.
Not counting the US, which it did okay over the weekend, like 30 or 40.
That's wild.
But like the fact I looked at the thing, it's like, oh, this thing is like made over 100 million, like just in China or whatever. I was like, wow.
Yeah. People like sharks, man.
Okay, I admit I love that first movie. I know it's stupid, but I don't care.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. No.
You just need dumb fun movies to watch.
Yeah, and I watched Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem over the weekend. That was good. I love the personalities they gave all the turtles. They felt like real teenagers for once.
Yeah.
What else? I guess that's about it. I haven't seen The Flash yet, but I'll probably end up watching it.
The Flash, oh my god, there are, that movie is a movie I want to like, but can't, for a variety of reasons, that I'm not going to go into, because it'll,
Wasn't it like the overall message of that movie? It's like, yeah, the white billionaire was right.
That's kind of
away from the story.
Mm.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, if the white billionaire is Batman.
That's true. Always trust Batman. Regardless of who he is.
Which ends up being like three or four different people by the end of the movie. I don't know.
Anything else about Guardians?
Support the writers and the actors during the strike. Because
I agree.
Hope the visual artists get unionized properly so they can
get what they're asking for. Yeah, yeah. Everybody.
I mean, this is a shakeup the industry needed behind the scenes for a long time. So
yeah.
And I guess it's time of speaking. Nothing's resolved, so we'll see.
Basically, once the backlog is out, the tap's going to be empty, and we're probably going to be looking at reality TV, another reality TV boom.
Well, it's kind of different now. There's not as many. TV is different than the way it was way back when. Like the why it was so disruptive to network TV back then was more that they were pumping out really long seasons really fast. And now TVs are more like movies. So I don't think I really have a point, but it's just like it's not quite the same. And so like the 3 or 4 months are on strike when they were pumping out TV really fast meant a lot more when they were putting out more TV content.
Another thing we have to be concerned about is they start putting out like AI written and.
Oh, I heard that. I heard that. The practice didn't last very long because they realized it sucks.
Yeah. It's
not like, legally, they maybe not even can't even do it. And who knows?
I hope it all ends up with a better entertainment industry, but
I mean, no one's going to be happy at the end of it.
That's compromise.
But it's going to, they have to address a lot of modern realities that, you know, it wasn't before. Anyway, to wrap it up, apparently the legendary Star-Lord
will return.
Apparently about a movie about Peter on Earth. Well, they haven't officially announced anything. And I don't know if Gunn will be involved or not, but he talked a lot about it in the commentary. Like, it was a thing he talked with Feige about. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if he even can be involved, you know, that he's over at DC, at least not for a few years.
He's going to be busy, you know, bailing water to that sinking ship. I mean,
you want to throw WB under the bus some more? The poor big corporation.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be poor media corporation.
I'm going to throw Warner Brothers Discovery under the bus a lot because they're throwing a lot of. Hey, what about that? Hey, who wants to see that Batgirl movie that, you know, has disappeared off the face of the earth?
Yep.
It's one of those, like, I don't agree with it at all. Like, obviously, I want those movies to come out. A lot of people worked hard on them. But, like, if things are to be believed, it was like, it was almost like the life and death of the company. if they release those movies, just, like, money-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they were looking at it from a money perspective, and it's not good, but, you know, if they released those, they could have lost a lot of money, and who knows what would have happened to, like, Warner Brothers as a whole. Not saying those because those two movies would have made like a world of difference. But
well, I mean, we're seeing what's happening to Warner Brothers as a whole now. A lot of consolidation of their brands is happening. They're closing the Cartoon Network studios here in Atlanta and consolidating into Warner Brothers Animation.
They're just trying to save money.
That they maybe would have had if they, you know, hadn't spent billions trying to buy each other out.
We know so much about corporate politics. We know exactly what's going on. So, anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy, we like it.
Yes.
We love it.
I don't know if I'll put that last part in. I don't know if it's relevant. Anyway, thank you for joining us.
I think we need to put it in, but that's just my opinion. But yeah.
Well, thank you, Randy.
I know, right? I have the best opinions. I'm never wrong.
Never wrong.
I mean, I don't think I'm wrong, but you don't think you're wrong either. And that's everybody thinks they're right eventually.
I don't think nothing. I know I'm right. I always have good opinions. Nobody disagrees with me.
And I want to have a little bit more Baldur's Gate 3 time today. So I am saying goodnight. And see you next time.
Bye. All right.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. Go kill dinosaurs.
What does that mean? Why do you want to kill dinosaurs? Are you talking about that game that I don't have?
That game that you could have if you had Game Pass?
That I could have for exchange for money.
And goods and services.
I wouldn't pay $60 for it. I love that game. I do. It's not worth $60. just get it on Game Pass.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
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 Bye. And that's a wrap.
That's what they call podcast.